Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Spotlight On here at AfterBuzz TV, where we interview some of Hollywood's hottest up-and-comers and veterans. Today, I am very excited to be interviewing Jae-Soo Park. You know her from Friends from College, but she has had a very long, illustrious, and exciting career. She's a wonderful person, and I can't wait to chat with her, so stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Yes, Aloha Hansen, in honor of Friends from College.
Just
jam.
Just, yeah.
For you podcast listeners, we're bopping in here. Of course, Jay, this was featured in season one of Friends from College.
Yes.
Of which you are a series regular, playing the very quirky, very hilarious Marianne.
Yes.
And guys, this is Spotlight On. My name is Jeff Graham, and as I mentioned, I'm here with Jae-Soo Park. You guys know Jay from a lot, but most recently, Netflix's huge hit Friends from College, which has one of my favorite casts of any show that's really airing right now.
Thank you.
Season two is just announced, and I love your performance on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm very excited to have you here. Guys, before we went on air, I was going to say Jae-Soo Park, but I was corrected to say Jae-Soo Park, and we started having a conversation about this. Technically, what would be the, like, official pronunciation of your name if we were not being self-centered Americans?
No, it's not even about being self-centered. It's kind of like the placement of your tongue.
Okay.
Like, you just, if you're not born saying it, it's very, very difficult.
I'm sure.
It's Seoul.
Jae-Soo Park.
See,
I can't really.
Totally wrong. It sounded completely different to me. You just said Smith.
Did I?
But
is it the well, dialect or the pronunciation too? Or
the S? We don't have a hard S.
Okay.
It's a very soft S, but the American English S is a S.
Yeah.
But this is a saw.
So okay,
it's a very softer S. So it's very, very difficult to say.
I'm sure.
So, no one can really say it, you know, who's American.
Right.
So when we first moved to the U.S., my parents were just frustrated, and they were just like, you know what, we're going to change it to Korean people. Obviously, we're still going to be Seoul.
Right.
But to Americans, we're just going to, because everybody was just saying Sue anyways. I don't know why, because it would technically be like
Sa.
Duh, like
or,
Sa,
yeah.
Right? That's, you know, which is even worse.
Yeah.
So they were just like, yeah, you know, we're just going to say Sue. So that's kind of like how I grew up saying it.
Well,
so it's kind
nice
of weird when people say it right.
At least it's close to your name. It's so interesting. I went to a university in the Midwest, and all of the, particularly Asian foreign exchange mm-hmm. students, would just pick American names. And it kind of bummed me out because
yeah.
I was like, how lazy are Americans that, like, we won't even mispronounce your name? Like, it's like literally we're so lazy that instead of learning and at least trying to say your name, we'll just say like Claire or Daisy or something.
Well, I think, I mean, especially like maybe our generation, maybe not so now, but there was so much pressure to assimilate and so much pressure just to kind of be American that I think it was embarrassing. Like when people said, you know, like my full name, my real full name is Jaewon, but basically, because it's two names in my social security card, basically they made the J part my first name,
right.
And then the one part my middle name, when it should actually be together. So growing up, it's tradition for my family to always have that first J name. So my brother's Jaehan, my cousin's Jaren, Jaeho, Jaewook, you know, everybody's J. But because it all got split up, everybody thought our first name was Jay.
So all have the same name.
All of our name is Jay.
Nice.
Yeah, so my friends would call and they'd be like, is Jay home? And they'd be like, girl
yes.
Jay or boy Jay? You know, so yeah. Yeah,
that's very interesting. I want to resume this very interesting conversation. I'm always interested in the cultural experience of all the people I get to interview, but I want to start by talking about Friends from College because we're a TV network
Let's
and our fans love this show. I count myself among those fans. It was it kind of snuck on Netflix with this unbelievable cast. Of course, Nick Stoller's writing and directing, who I've been a fan of for a long time. Season two is just announced, which we're super excited about.
Yes.
We have a little teaser that I'm going to call to now. Marissa, whenever you're ready, you can bump that teaser.
What's going on with you? It's the engagement party. I don't know why I invited all those people. Ethan, Sam, Lisa, Nick, and Marianne all together in the same place for the first time since Sam's 40th.
They're your best friends for some reason.
You're right.
You're right.
They are really great people.
Well, I didn't say that.
I said no strippers.
They're going to be on their best behavior.
Nice.
And we are.
I'm sure.
It's really boring this season. We're really, really nice.
Tame.
We do nothing.
That's good. That's season one. I was, I wished you guys would have been a little more outgoing.
Yeah.
A little more responsible.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to hear in season two you're toning it down.
Yeah. It's just going to be a book club, basically. We discuss the same book for 8 episodes.
Perfect. Yeah. I love it. For those who have seen the show, you know that, of course, we're being very facetious. It's one of my favorite things about the show is the characters are kind of prickly. Mm-hmm. And the show is very open about that, which I really appreciate about the writing. For those who haven't seen Friends from College, how would you describe the show to them?
Shockingly, it's about friends from college. I know, it's weird.
I didn't expect that.
They named it like that, I have no idea. You know, it's about friendships, you know, and what do friends from college really mean? Because I have obviously, you know, it's such a very special time. Mm. You know, you're not a child, you're not an adult, you're kind of in between, you're figuring it out, you're figuring out who you are, how you belong, and you form these friendships, and they become life friendships, but you're like, wait, I'm not that same person.
Right.
You know, or am I? I don't know.
That's what the show...
That's what I think the show really touches upon.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I related to that so viscerally, and I'm fairly recently out of college, but one thing the show is so interested in that I think is not explored a lot in a lot of art is the fact that when you... revisit old friendships, you can kind of regress. And a lot of those old habits kind of come back out.
Yeah.
Was that something that appealed to you when you were reading for the part?
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. I mean, but that's the thing. Those things do come out, but it's almost like you play a role, you know, and you don't even think you're doing it. But you just feel like, oh, I was this one. I was the funny one, or I was the serious one, or I was this. And you just like kind of fall back into it.
Mm.
And there is definitely that regression that happens, I think, with friendships. I don't know. It can be unhealthy, I guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, in this show, it definitely explores that. But, you know, but I think that's what makes these friendships so special, because you do share that.
History. Yeah.
That you don't with everyone. So
it gives the show this really unique kind of emotional grounding that I think a lot of comedies don't necessarily have. Of course, it's created by Nick Stoller and his wife, which I think is really neat to see them working together. But I've been a fan of his work for a long time. But one thing I like about this show is I think it does have a bit more of a dramatic streak than maybe some of his earlier work. When you're talking with him on set and, you know, reading his material before you're going on set.
He doesn't let us talk.
He doesn't let you talk. No. He just sits behind a Video Village.
And... yeah. He's got one of those big megaphones and he yells at us. And then he sends his assistant to,
And it's a walkie-talkie kind of thing.
Yeah. And we can't look at him directly in the eyes.
So I've gotten that impression.
It's all in the contract.
Sounds like a very healthy set, Jay. It sounds great.
I drink a lot on set.
It's good. Like your character.
Right.
It's perfect.
Yeah. Just white, though.
Just white wine.
Show.
Yeah. But what's interesting to me is I would think you'd have to do some pretty subtle kind of work as an actress to make sure that you're still being funny, but kind of touching on some of those more serious notes. Is that something that you're pretty thoughtful about when you're on set?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so, because it is true. We do discuss that. Like, a lot of times we're like, is this too much? Like, should we pull it back? Are we being crazy? Are we just yelling, you know? And there are appropriate times for when you're yelling. I think Nick's very good about the different kinds of levels and hitting those levels. Mm-hmm. And I do think you have to be mindful because, I mean, you're not always one thing, you know, just as like a regular person. But for me, I think the funniest comedy is the real stuff, you know, the real reactions.
Right.
It's the situations. You have to trust that the situations are funny and crazy, but how you react, you should do it in a normal, or whatever that means, in a, you know, heightened normal manner.
Right.
And I think that's a lot funnier.
Yeah, I think with a show like this, and I'm not even remotely an actor, so please correct me if I'm just speaking about this in a way that's like so eye-rolling for our fans, but you kind of just have to exist, right? Like you sort of just have to truly transport yourself into those situations. And I think if you're trying to act, that's when the scene kind of falls apart.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I was just telling somebody, the minute that you try to be funny, it's the unfunniest thing ever.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm sure.
Yeah. Or sometimes, like, you have an idea in your head that, oh, God, this is going to be the funniest thing. And then you do it, and crickets, you know? And then other times you're just kind of in it and you do something and it's the funniest thing.
I'm
so
sure.
It is that trust, I think, in yourself. Nick has, I think the great thing about the show is that Nick has so much trust, you know, with all of us. I mean, so many times he'll just come up to me and say, do something funny. Okay, go.
Right.
I'm like, oh.
Here I go.
Okay, you know, and I think just knowing that he has the trust, you have the confidence to do it. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, and that's great.
Right.
That's nice.
That's the safety of a really positive set. And the thing I have to say is that this is truly one of the best casts on TV right now. It's Cobie Smulders, who you guys know from How I Met Your Mother. Nat Faxon, who I've liked as a writer for a long time. He wrote the screenplay of The Descendants and won an Oscar for that. But I'm trying to remember who else.
Fred Savage.
Of course, Fred Savage, who's a legend.
Keegan-Michael
Key's in it.
Reese.
Yeah, so yeah. It's like really this just incredibly solid cast of performers who all have experience in comedy, but also in some dramatic work. And I think it's all kind of coming to a confluence on this show. What's that been like to just work with such kind of legendary collaborators?
Oh, gosh. I think it was a mistake. I think that they probably made a mistake casting me. They were like, I was the one, the headshot, you know, below the headshot they were supposed to cast.
Well, I'm very glad that mistake was made, Jay. It's good.
So don't tell anybody. Yeah, that's what I say. Just don't say anything. Just do your stuff and go home. The thing about them is that they're all awesome, amazing actors, super funny. But they're also the nicest, just wonderful people.
Good.
And you don't get that, you know, on most sets I've heard. It's so funny because, like, you know, a lot of times, you know, people will, those transpo guys, they pretty much know, you know, everybody in town. And they're like, you know, there are people, like, we hear everything, we see everything, and you guys are the nicest people. And you guys actually like each other and you guys talk to each other. You know, that's not always the case. And I'm just thinking, really? But
yeah.
I guess so.
That's you sometimes get nervous to meet your heroes in these kinds of situations. It's interesting. When I first moved to LA and I was just like trying to survive and eat, I was doing background work with Central Casting. If any of you guys don't know, that's like extras in television shows
Think if I've ever done anything with Central Casting. I'm sure I have.
It's a very, very fulfilling work. It's a lot of, if you guys notice, like people acting like they're eating in the back of a scene. I did a lot of that for my first year. I pretended to talk to people.
I have the most... I did some extra work when I first moved here, and I actually did, there was a movie, LL Cool J was in a movie, I think it was LL Cool J, I think Gabriel Union was in it, it was called Deliver Us from Eva, I don't know if you remember this movie, but so we were like in a bar scene, and I was heavily featured, they put me like right behind LL Cool J, right, so it's just basically him and a friend, and they're talking at the bar, and you just see me in the background, right? And I've never seen it, but recently it was on cable or something. I was like, oh, I'm going to see this, you know, just kind of flip on it. And I see that scene, and it's the most embarrassing thing I've ever done in my life. I'm just overacting. I'm just like,
I'm sure.
Like, I could not believe it. And it was horrendous.
I was terrible. The one nice thing for me as a background actor was I have a very just like generic white male look. So like I can be a cop. It's like, I'm definitely not attractive enough to ever be cast in like a good looking person role, but I'm not quite ugly enough to be cast in like an ugly person role.
Okay.
So I was like a great White House aide or like bleacher, like spectator.
Yeah.
But so I was doing a ton of background work, but my very first job was Scandal. And the which is really cool. Yeah. I mean, I got to work on all these amazing sets. But they tell you to not smile or look at the camera.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, my very first take, I'm just smiling, walking down the hallway, and I don't know why they kept bringing me back, but...
Did they have to cut? Did they know...
Well, that's the issue. I guess I was maybe pleasant enough that I would never get, like, reported for being terrible at my job, so they would just keep bringing me back. But And I got better. I did learn. Yeah. The reason I brought it up, though, is because I'm speaking to your point of, it is true that most sets aren't as friendly, and it was interesting for me to be on sets with actors I really admire and notice that they might not be quite as patient or gracious as they act like they are on red carpets or,
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a set can also be, like, a really stressful time. You're there for a really long time, maybe... You know, it's hot or you're hungry or I mean, there's just so many things that's going on. And you're up at the crack of dawn and maybe it's the 16th hour and, you know, you need to go home. I don't know what it is. So
it's true.
I do understand it to a certain degree.
Right. There's certain lines where it's like that's tolerable. And then somewhere you're like, ooh, I don't know if we're all better for the way you just acted. You know, like, I don't know if the atmosphere of the set has improved because of this behavior, but it is understandable because especially single cam, which you guys are shooting, are really, really long days. How long, like, what's the general production timeline for, like, an 8-episode season?
Well, we, like, the actual production, I mean, I know, obviously, they do pre-production and all of that stuff, but the actual production is only 2.5 months.
Yeah.
We shoot.
Which, when you think about it, for, I guess, 5 hours of material. That's pretty busy. I mean, you guys are... Are you shooting, like, 10 pages a day, or...?
I
guess it depends on the day.
Gosh, it really depends on the day.
Yeah.
And it really depends on what you're doing that day. And there's, you know, obviously, like, technical things or stunt things. It's going to take a lot more time. Mm-hmm. Two-person scenes are going to go really fast.
Right.
You know, if you're doing a scene with Keegan, he's just going to improv for 5 hours. So you're there all day. but yeah, I mean, it really depends on the day, but yeah, we definitely squeeze a lot in.
I'm sure. Speaking of behind the scenes stuff, one of my favorite episodes from last season was your guys' wine tour.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to hear, like, I feel like as an outsider to the show, like, I was having so much fun watching that on screen. What was that like to shoot? And are there any, like, behind the scenes stories from that day?
You know, the funny thing about that week was we did go to North Fork, and there was kind of a wine, it's kind of a new wine thing going on over there. But my daughter and my husband were coming out to New York to visit me.
Fun.
And I didn't know my schedule ahead of time, but my husband just had, like, a hiatus that specific week, and it turned out it was that week. So instead of coming to New York, they had to hang out in New Jersey. So it wasn't the most fun time for them. And I think there was, like, one aquarium. And my husband said it was the most depressing aquarium. It was, like, one fish.
I mean, Jersey.
And,
I don't want to smack talk Jersey, but...
Yeah. Or is that Long Island? Is that the same as Long Island?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Personally, I don't want to be biased, but I find New York to be a little depressing. I feel like it's fun for, like, a day. But I'm so preferable to L.A., personally. Just
where are you from?
I'm from Cleveland.
Oh.
So, you know, but it's kind of like if you want to work in the business, you either choose New York or L.A. And my wife works in late night, as you know, and luckily she got, like, the one late night show that's out here. So
okay.
I think maybe in our future we could end up in New York, depending on where she goes.
I know. New York is definitely, it's definitely a young person's town. Like, it's a lot. It's exhausting. It really is exhausting. It is fun to visit.
Mm-hmm.
I actually really like Brooklyn.
Mm.
I stayed in Brooklyn the last time. But you gotta have a lot of money.
Right. That's what it is. You can kind of survive in LA on less of a budget, but New York, it's, like, very, very expensive.
It's very hard. It's very hard.
So you guys were shooting in New York for the entire first season, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I thought maybe you guys... Oh, of course, because the show takes place in New York. It's one of those brain fart moments.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be. I mean...
That's true. Yeah,
it's probably... You know, it could be in Atlanta. It could be in Vancouver.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But a lot of on-location shooting for you guys, which, of course, that can also lead to long days because you don't have the convenience of a set necessarily. Any funny moments shooting on location specifically that affected production or anything that our fans might be interested in?
You know, the first season, actually, not funny, haha, but Trump actually won while I was going back and forth quite a bit. Because of my family. And I was actually, the election was going on, and I was actually on a flight back. And, you know, everybody was watching it on the thing, and Trump won. And
so you were in the air when
I was in the air when he won, when it was announced. And then the next day, because we were shooting outside, and we had to actually shut down production because a big protest went down. So it was very surreal. It was a very interesting time.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of the show Smilf on Showtime. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to catch that. It's really, really good with Frankie, Sean Rosie O'Donnell's in it and Connie Britton. It's a really interesting show. But they were talking about how just something that monumental, just because obviously none of us expected the results of this election. It's been, for lack of a better word, a very interesting couple years. But I think, you know, for artists and anyone, it is kind of like a show-stopping moment. Like, I think it's, of course it affected production just because it's such a, it's just been a very interesting 2 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's calmed down quite a bit.
Yeah, definitely. And we need comedy to get us through some of the tough things, which makes me want to ask about season two. I know you're probably not allowed to say much, but we're just like salivating to know as much as we can. So anything you can share about season two, maybe about Marianne or the journeys of the characters.
Well, there is it continues.
Great, that's good to know. It's not an anthology.
It continues
and just
forward. Yes, it's keeps going forward.
Yes. If I remember right, there was a Jeep in a pool at the end of last season.
Yeah,
so,
there was a Jeep in a pool, and then the affair, you know, Keegan's character never confesses, you know, but Kobe's character confesses to her cheating. So there's a lot of changes.
Okay.
A lot of changes.
But it sounds like questions do get answered.
They do.
Good. That's always good.
The questions get answered, and then at the end of the season, there are more questions.
Oh, good. That's what we hope for.
A lot more questions. But yeah, I mean, I guess that's all I can really say. I mean, there's so many changes. Everybody goes through a lot of changes, but we're still who we are.
Good. Okay, well, we love those characters. And for fans of the show, we actually will be returning to cover season two, which we're very excited about. Jay, we would love to have you back when we do that next year.
Thank you.
I will be in touch with your people, and we'll make sure that happens. But I'm so excited to talk about more than just the show, because I'm a big fan of your career. I'm a big fan of your family. We were talking at the top. You come from a very Korean family. And I'm interested, my instinct, so you're a second generation.
No, I mean, I guess I'm first generation. I immigrated here.
From South Korea. Okay.
I was six.
Okay. So I can't imagine that your career aspirations neatly aligned with those of a traditional immigrant family. I might be speculating, but I'd love to hear you speak on that.
I know, and it's so disappointing because I haven't even played a doctor on TV. That would be really
awesome. What about
awesome.
A lawyer, though?
I've never even played a lawyer. I know. It's a hippie yogi, which is also a nightmare. Not only am I an actor, but I play an actor on TV. This is like the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
No, it was
not even in a fictional world can you satisfy your parents.
No. And I'm not even married on the show. Like, I can't even, and I don't believe in marriage. Like, this is the worst thing ever. And it's on Netflix. My parents have no idea what that even means.
Oh, no.
You know, they're like, is this on ABC? Like, fresh off the boat?
Your husband managed to get a network show. Why couldn't you have done that for us, Jay?
No, you know what? My husband was really nothing until they saw him in a Korean commercial. I'm not even joking. When we first started dating, I was like, yeah, he's an actor. You know, he was starting to do fairly well. But they were like, well, we haven't seen him in anything, you know? And then he was like in a Verizon commercial, and they dubbed it in Korean. And they played it in the Korean channels, and they saw him. And that's when they were like, oh, yeah, he's an actor.
I'm sure they were thrilled when the interview came out. I'm sure that was...
Oh, yeah, they were actually. They were very, very popular at their church, let's just say.
They're South Korean, though, so I'm sure there was at least a bit of an interesting dynamic with that.
Of course. Yeah, of course. course. Yeah. And, you know, everybody was saying, oh, he's so much more handsome than Kim Jong-un. And so that's why he's not mad. Or that's why, you know, I mean, we actually had security throughout that whole thing.
I'm sure. I remember. Yeah. Well, yeah. I was supposed to go see an early screening. This was back when I still lived in Cleveland, but I was starting to get into this business and some coverage and everything. But our screening was totally just canceled for safety purposes.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It was a really scary time for you guys.
It was a really crazy time. And our daughter was really, really young. And I remember we had security, and I thought it was a little weird, you know, to have security every day. And it was a little strange, but I was like, okay. And then our daughter was really, really young, because I remember I was still doing Mommy and Me. And I remember I was in Mommy and Me. My husband kept calling me. I was like, okay, finally picked it up. And I was like, what's going on? And he's like, the security guy just called me to say that your wife and daughter was followed.
Oh, my gosh.
So after that, I was like, okay, I get it. I mean, I don't know who it was or why. And then they had also said, yeah, this guy, when you left, went to your door, was kind of poking around, and then, like, followed you guys.
Wow.
And we cut him off, and it's fine. She's fine. But we didn't want to freak her out, so we're going to freak you out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so after that, I was like, okay. And then it just kind of ended.
Yeah, I felt like that. Well, I love that movie. I thought it was hilarious.
It's a great movie.
And it's so funny, too, because, like, the movie is just a comedy film. I mean, like, obviously, I understand why there's some, like, political loadedness, but... It's like ultimately just like a funny Seth Rogen movie with good performances.
Yeah.
And it's sort of that thing where you look back and you're like, this was the reason that like there was an earthquake, like a metaphorical earthquake in our town. But I'm sure that was just working in this business and kind of going back to your family. When did you sort of realize that this was the career you wanted? And how did, we have a lot of listeners who are aspirational artists, and how did you kind of navigate that, especially probably in a family that didn't necessarily recognize this was a viable career option?
I lied.
Good. That's always an option.
To our viewers and listeners, lie. I mean, I hid it for a long time. Like, just first and foremost, I hid my desire to even want to pursue it. And then when I really, really wanted to do it, first and foremost, I never thought that I could. I mean, it was crazy. I was like, it's just a dream. I want to be an actor. Ha, ha, ha. Okay, I'm going to do it. I enjoy it. I love it. But I'm going to try to do something else. I'm going to, you know, try to, you know, do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't want to do anything else. And I didn't really try doing anything else. I mean, I did. We got jobs here and there.
Right.
I was like, okay. I did get a degree in design. Mainly because I got a degree in costume design, mainly so I could be in the theater department because I was doing all the shows anyways. And my parents had just thought, oh, you know, she's being outgoing. She's doing shows. It's great. And they came to support it, and they supported the hobby.
Mm.
But after college, that's when I told them, I'm going to move to LA and I'm going to be an actor. And it was very, very... it was a painful time. I think they were very disappointed. Very disappointed. And rightly so. I mean, it's I don't think it's so much that they didn't believe that I could do it. I mean, no, they didn't believe I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was who wants that for their child? Like I know I don't want that for my child, because it's very, very difficult. It's
right. Constant just the highs rejection. And lows.
It's a terrible, terrible life, you know? So why would you want that? So I do understand it. But the thing is, like, I didn't want to do anything else.
Right.
I didn't want to do it. I didn't feel like I was meant to. And I think it's very, very special just to know what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard, you know? It's not everybody wakes up and has a passion or thinks that this is what they were meant to do.
Right.
So when you have that, how special is that? So you have to follow it.
That's what, whenever people ask me, like, should I do this? I'm like, well, do you feel like you have to? Because if you do, then the answer is obvious, you know? And the one nice thing is I do feel like living in a town like LA, you're at least surrounded by like-minded people who are also kind of scraping along and trying to make it work. So I'm sure that was at least helpful in your journey.
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially in college when I was doing the shows, I mean, that's when I really felt a sense of belonging, you know, not just because I was doing what I love, but also I was surrounded by people who were also doing what they loved and who felt like this was a passion that they were, you know, following.
So when you look back on your career, what do you see as your big break? Like, I feel like everyone looks back, and sometimes what actors or performers mm-hmm. see as their big break isn't necessarily what we would assume is.
No, you know, it never is. I mean, I still feel like, oh, you know, that big break is just... It never is. Like, yeah. I, you know, several years ago, I was cast in a very small film called The Big Short.
Oh, right.
And I got, like, completely cut out. And I, you know, my reps, everybody was just like, this is going to be huge, you know?
Adam McKay.
I played Christian Bale's wife.
Oh.
So it was, like, a big deal. And I got, like, completely cut out. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. Like, you think... You know, and then you know, I even told people and everybody went to go see it right. and like, oh, we saw you on the phone when he answered your call. Great.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the thing. Like, there were so many of those moments where I thought that was going to be it, mm-hmm. you know, and then it just didn't work out. And then certain things that you're like, oh, I didn't think anybody was going to see it. And then they do and they love it. You know,
that's like, a great point.
My husband and I actually, when my daughter was first born, she was like 6 months old, we did a little web show called Baby Mentalist, and I like get recognized from that.
Wow.
You know, so that's the thing. I mean, you just don't know, and, you know, you just keep working and hope that, you know, you're, so I don't really believe in that big break thing.
Yeah. You know? It is kind of a myth, I think, that, like, sometimes the Hollywood version of, like, mm-hmm. the actor's journey kind of perpetuates.
Oh, the overnight success is 15 yeah, years.
Right.
Like, nobody wants to hear you working at TGI Fridays and right. going to commercial auditions, you know? Like, that's mm-hmm. not romantic. That's not exciting.
Yeah, it's, yeah. So it's, I think it's important for our listeners to hear that, like, if this is a journey you want to do it because you love it. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, now there are so many more opportunities and access to make your own material. I mean, like, even Baby Mentalist.
Yeah.
That can be the most freeing thing, is just to self-produce.
It is. But the thing is, like, even doing that is incredibly hard. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's because people always think that, oh, you know, if you're an actor, you can write mm-hmm. or you can do other things, you know, and it's not always the case, you know, it's right. like to create your own material is not that easy. I mean, it's easy to create it. Creating good stuff is very, very difficult.
That's so, the truth. Yeah. But what I like is I feel like there's a bit more democracy now because it's kind of the Wild West. And,
oh, yeah.
you know, HBO can put $100 million into a show and it might mm-hmm. not make it if the show's not good.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's scary in that way, but it does feel like there's a little less power at the hands of these studio juggernauts because mm-hmm. someone could come along, Lena Dunham could shoot a movie for $30,000 and win a South by Southwest prize yeah. and create Girls. So yeah. it's like, you kind of do never know, which is so interesting.
I know, you never know. The only thing that you know is that you have to like work on your craft, you have to work on, you know, mm-hmm. do good stuff.
Gotta do good stuff.
Yeah.
So now that I'm sure... Since Friends from College, you're reading more material, getting more offers. Do you feel like you're at the point where you are saying no? Like, if you're reading something you're not liking, is that important to you? Or I don't know. I'd love to hear you speak on that.
Yeah, I think it is important to say no.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very difficult thing. Mm-hmm. Not just as actors, just in life, you know? I have the luxury now to say no. I didn't. Mm-hmm. For a very long time, like last week. I just decided today I'm going to say no.
Right. You heard it here first.
But, yeah, I mean, just as far as representation, you know, just as a woman and obviously as a woman of color, I think that's very important, what you put out there.
Mm-hmm.
If you do have the luxury, I have no hate on anybody who takes something that... You know, may not be the best representation, but you know what? Rent's got to get paid. You got to eat. Lucky for you, right. you're doing what you love. Great. Like, I can't hit on you for that.
Of course not. But how do you deal with that? I mean, like, especially in TV film, you do have to just latch onto those opportunities. Mm-hmm. But as someone who's obviously, like, a thoughtful, interesting, nuanced person, how do you personally as an artist deal with material that might not be the most satisfying?
Welcome to my world, except for Friends from College.
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the most important things that actors have to do is find empathy in your characters, no matter what. You have to find the humanity. You have to latch onto something that that you can relate to, right. you know, and that's, it can be a challenge with some roles. Some roles, it can be very, very easy. Mm-hmm. Some roles, it's like a gift, you right. know, getting something. And even on our show, I think that we have a lot of freedom to, I know the writers, they tell me that the more we get to know you, the more we can write for you. And that's really fun.
Yeah.
So that's a gift to us and that's a gift to them. So, yeah, I mean, I think finding humanity, no matter what kind of role you get, whether you want to play it, whether you have to play it, that's challenging, and it can also be really fun.
I'm sure. It's because it's the thing that makes your craft challenging in a way that's probably mm-hmm. fulfilling. I want to tread tactfully here, because I feel like I could be like the annoying straight white guy who's trying to like reach into the experience of something I don't understand. But when I look at Hollywood right now, I see representation getting better. Mm-hmm. I see it getting better for women. I see it getting better for African Americans. If you look at a film like Black Panther, mm-hmm. Of course, we had Crazy Rich Asians this summer, which was such a wonderful film. But I
never
still
heard of it.
Didn't heard of them. But it still is interesting. I feel like personally, when I look at ethnic representation across all mm-hmm. of Hollywood, I look at South Asian and East Asian representation as still needing to go the furthest.
Yeah.
I feel like that you guys aren't often included in that discussion. I think Master of None did some really interesting work with that last season, but I don't know if you agree with me or why that might be the case. I mean, it's gotten better.
South Asians in particular?
I would maybe speak more on, like, maybe the Korean representation on mm-hmm. television, for example. It just feels like that's the most, to me as a viewer, that feels like that's the group that's most readily stereotyped in TV and film, from what I'm seeing.
Yeah, you know, I think, gosh, you know, it's that whole controversy of the model minority, mm-hmm. you know, and I think it's just that really, that desire and passion to assimilate, mm-hmm. you know, that's been taught immigrants like myself and obviously second generation, third generation as well. It's changing a lot, I think. The younger generation, they have a lot more of a voice mm-hmm. of being kind of who they are and not having to assimilate or not to be that model minority. So I think there's a lot of change. And you know, and that's the thing, like, Asian groups are not taught to be angry, you know? I think growing up, we're just taught to be nice, and we're taught to be, to work hard, and you're gonna get stuff by working hard and studying hard. So I think that's, like, really instilled in us. I can only speak for myself and my generation, right. but there is definitely, you know, more of a change. And I think the Crazy Rich Asians, for sure, doing so well has a lot to do with that.
Well, and what I so appreciate about Friends from College is, like, I feel like your character's ethnicity is a non-issue on mm-hmm. the show. Like, I don't feel like there are really moments on the show where the fact that you're not, you know, a white New Yorker even uh-huh. matters. Which
yeah.
I think, like, obviously, it's very, very important when art is leaning into that for a message or for a purpose, but it's also really refreshing just to see actors of color just take roles. You know, like, that's one of my favorite things
yeah,
I'm seeing.
You know, and I think that that's so important to kind of show just different types of people. Right. And even with Keegan, you know, being the lead, mm-hmm. you know, and being half black,
right.
I think that... And we don't really talk about it. I mean, the thing is, like, we do touch upon it, which is great because we're not blind,
right.
you know, and to ignore it and not talk about it, that's weird.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's doing a disservice. So, but I think it's very, very important to, you know, showcase these people, these flawed people, and they happen to be, you know, Asian and black and,
right.
you know.
It's just more interesting. It was Lena Waithe who was talking about the fact that, like, we're at a point in TV and film right now where, like, even straight white dudes are just bored of seeing straight white dudes on television. Like, whether or not it's right or wrong, it's just, like, we had
yeah.
that for so long. Like, it is just nice. It's like, oh, look, like, everyone. It's just, like, so much less boring, I think.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it. Straight white dudes are not going anywhere.
Right, we'll
okay?
be fine.
I mean, they're gonna exist. They're gonna be fine.
Yeah.
But I do think the change is... I don't think you can get anything made these days with just having all white people on the show.
Yeah, because it's just, it's not truthful and it just is a little more boring. I just think, like, I like the idea of Actually, I don't so much like the idea of diversity for inclusion's sake. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of diversity because it makes stuff better.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're starting to see that more and more, which is really nice. As someone who reviews a lot of TV and film, that's been the thing I've appreciated most, is just like a more interesting storytelling.
Yeah.
So you have an industry family. You and mm-hmm. Randall have a 5-year-old daughter, six-year-old mm-hmm. daughter. Do you guys want her to be involved in this crazy business?
No. We want her to take care of us when we get old.
I'm sure. Has she had any moments where she looks like she might be leaning into a kind
of
career?
You know, I told you she was in that web show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And she was fantastic. Fun. She was wonderful. When she was 6 months old, she was wonderful. We did it for like 6 months. So in the last episode, she had just started walking. So that was kind of part of the show.
Fun.
And she was like a phenomenal actor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even joking. She was a wonderful
like,
actor.
You're stressed out that you're like, oh no, she's good at this. I hope she doesn't want to do this.
I know. And then she got worse. Just worse. She lost it. Yeah, she lost the magic. Thank God. She's a terrible actor now.
Good, thank God.
It's tough because... although her school photos this year is fantastic.
Were they?
But she's had terrible photos.
I mean, everyone has ups and downs in their career, so maybe she just had a dry spell from 2 to 5. You never know.
Well, she's too old now, you know? I think, you know, for girls, you start to lose your cuteness, and I know.
She's not castable anymore.
Now she has to go character.
That's fair, yeah. Right. Yeah, I totally understand. That's a tough journey for female actresses, especially.
Yes, when you age out.
She becomes 7. It's just, that's when it all ends.
It's her and Helen Mirren. You go after the roles.
Dame Judi Dench, right. Maggie Smith.
And they're going to get it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's too late for her.
Right.
But I don't know. I'm always interested, and we talked about this a bit when I interviewed you mm-hmm. at an event a couple months ago, but I'm married to someone in the industry, and some of our listeners are, you know, LA based and probably people who are, you know, going for their dreams together as a couple. Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever struggled with that competitive factor? Because especially you're both in the exact same industry. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for people who might, especially both be actors?
I know, you know, it is very, very difficult. I think that it's been a great thing for us.
Mm-hmm.
I think that being in the industry and being both actors, you definitely understand a lot of things. There's a lot of unspoken understanding, like the hours, the travel, the depression, you know,
the crippling anxiety,
the drinking. you know, you understand it, so you can really support it, but there is. You can't let it destroy you.
Right.
I mean, the competitiveness or the attention. You have to know that it's not everything.
Mm-hmm.
That you have to create something stronger. I think that's what it is. You
right.
have to create something stronger than the industry, than the ego, than somebody telling you you're amazing. Like, all of those things go away, you know, and it's not forever. So you have to create something that you can come home to, something that you're proud of. Know that you're going to have ups, they're going to have downs, you know, and that's okay,
right.
you know, but it's very, very hard, especially at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think that's a really tough thing. I definitely, you know, went through that. I think early on in our career when things started kind of happening for him
mm-hmm.
and feeling kind of like, for me, like getting very close to things and not getting
right.
getting it. And I just remember when we first started dating, I was very close to getting on a show, and it was like between me and another girl, and she got it, and I just like broke down,
right.
just cried, broke down, just... I was like, I'm quitting.
Right.
This isn't going to happen. And he was starting to, you know, feel a little bit of an upswing. But I think, like, you have to know that you're in it together. And as cheesy as it sounds, his success is my success.
Right.
My success is his success. And know that it means nothing.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, it means nothing. So,
I think another thing, too, is that someone gave me that was really good advice was, if the person that's closest to you is succeeding, ultimately that can only help you, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's like that, if that's your teammate and they have a big jump, like,
yeah.
you'll be able to grab another hand and jump with them. And the same thing will happen when you have a big moment, and you know he needs that support too. Oh, so it is.
I will spend his money. Okay, his money is my money.
Of course, now you're getting that Netflix money, which I've heard is not bad.
Not as good as network money.
That's true. Network money is really where it's
but
at.
But that's also a dying. I keep telling him like he's like holding on to that heyday of Hollywood, right? Mm-hmm. There aren't very many shows.
I know. Like it's shows. Funny. It's ABC has such good family comedies, but the sitcoms kind of in dire straits mm-hmm. on network right now. And I mean, Fresh Off the Boat's one that's great. In general, I think ABC has good family mm-hmm. comedies, but it's, I don't want to say he's lucky because that's a wonderful show, but mm-hmm. The success rate, the survival rate for network comedies right now is not good.
It's not good.
Yeah.
It's not good, but it's also part of like a really old system.
Right.
And so creatively and, you know, but take that money.
Take that money and run. And yeah. It's nice. There's so many like hacky network shows and he's on a good one. So that must be nice for you guys. And same with, you guys are both series regulars on really wonderful shows, which is kind of rare.
You.
Yeah, it's nice for both of you, and it's great for us as well as fans.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun for us, and it's like super surreal, and we're so thankful.
Yeah, embrace it while you have it, right?
And that Nick Stoller, I do feel like Nick Stoller has been like a big part of our success.
That's true.
You know? Yeah, he's done a lot of stuff with him.
Well, he's such, I don't know Nick, and it sounds like from what you said, he's very hard to work with, micromanaging.
Abusive.
But, yeah.
I didn't even get to that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And Francesca's the worst.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. Is she pretty involved?
She is. Well, you know, they actually met in college.
Perfect.
And
they were at Harvard, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So just like
are you Harvard?
No. State school, baby.
Well, I don't know. I just figure all white men are from Harvard.
I'm flattered you think I'm even remotely smart enough to get into Harvard. I must be faking it very well.
Well, judging by our show, you don't have to be smart to go to Harvard.
Oh, that's true. That's a great point. I'm glad I didn't go to Harvard.
Yeah, yeah. So, what were we talking about?
Oh, just Nick and Francesca.
Oh, just Nick and Francesca. Oh, those fools. Yeah, they're just the nicest people. They're both... Francesca actually directed her first episode this season.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Well, we can't wait for this season. It's coming out in January. Jay, this has been so much fun for me. You're such an easy conversation. Thanks for coming on. Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you for having me.
We will be back covering season two of Friends from College, guys. I don't know the exact timeline on our coverage. Typically with Netflix shows, we'll let our panels like binge the show and put together some coverage. So I'd say about a week after the show premieres, you can expect us to start covering it. Jay, we would love to have you back when it comes. I don't know. We'll talk to your people and make sure that happens. But such a wonderful show and just so many congratulations. Marianne is so specific and weird, and I can tell you're making
specific and weird
in the best way. It's like there's so many versions of the hippie yogi that I've seen before, and you're bringing something that's like, oh, this is awesome, I haven't seen this yet. So props to your performance.
Thank
and
you.
Cannot wait
thanks
for season
lot.
Two
thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So we will be here covering that, and Jay, once again, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Anything else that you would like to promote, plug, as they say, to our fans who are listening?
Oh, do I want to, like,
anything that you, I mean, I know, any more baby mentalists?
No more. She's hung up her gun.
She's aged out.
She's aged out. She's too old. Yeah, you don't want to see her now.
Well, we'll wait for Friends from College, and of course they can follow you on Instagram if they want to see any more updates. So, and guys, my name is Jeff Graham. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can do that, at Jeffrey C. Graham. I host a weekly pilot review show here on Wednesdays at 5 p.m. We just changed times, but where we review a new pilot each week. Last week, we reviewed Julia Roberts' new Amazon show, Homecoming. That was very interesting. It's good.
I
listened to the podcast, actually. I know we're both podcasters, so it's a great performance from her, and it's nice. I think this is her first time on TV in a long time, so it's, of course, TV's where all the best stuff is now anyway, but we're reviewing a new YouTube show this Wednesday called Origin, so check that out.
Ooh.
Yeah, it looks pretty good.
I think I know that one.
Yes, and I will be back doing more Spotlight Ons, more interviews with amazing talent. Till next time, guys, thank you, and we will see you soon here on AfterBuzz TV.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.